Good evening. The Blue of a Rebbe. Have you heard of the Blue of a Rebbe? Yeah, it was a Holocaust survivor. Blue of a Rebbe. What's your shaykh, the Blue of a Rebbe? Pardon? You come from Blue? So 1 minute, but you. What do you mean from the shtetl Blue? I said, right, very nice. So what you would? Is that from your father's side? So your father knew the Blue, old Blue of a Rebbe? Take it. So, Mustafa, you can correct me when I say anything wrong with the story, you'll correct me, okay? Not yet. That's for him to start. So, the Blue of a Rebbe, it's a famous story. So you'll, the Blue of a Rebbe after, was in the DP camp. Feldafing. I think that's where it was. The DP camp, the Feldafing. It was after, as we know, the displaced persons camp after the war. People had nowhere to go. The villages, the cities, and their hometowns were completely destroyed. They had nowhere to go. So often they stayed for a good few years afterwards. And I think the last DP camp, there were years they were there. My grandmother herself was there for a bit in Bergen-Belsen. So Feldafing was a very large one. And the Blue of a Rebbe was the first Chanukah after liberation. The Blue of a Rebbe was was the leader in terms of spiritual, in terms of Ruchnis, in terms of Torah. He was the leader of the camp. He later moved to America where he restarted the Chassid. He wasn't able to restart the family. He didn't have any children after the war. The current Blue of a Rebbe, they're not really children and grandchildren. They're nephews. He didn't have any children after the war. And stepchildren. He had his wife's second wife's children son became the next Rebbe. So the Blue of a Rebbe after the war, it was in Chanukah, and was literally after liberation. Liberation was like in spring, and Chanukah half year later, all the Yidden were together in the big hall where he was to light the menorah for Chanukah. There was only one menorah for everybody. And he was about to make the bus. There was thousands of people there gathered together for the, and he was given the covet of lighting the menorah. And as he was about to light the menorah, he looks around, and eventually after looking around, he makes the three appropriate brachas, as we do Chanukah. And he made the brachas and found Moish Tzur and etc. After that locket, there was one person. I forgot his name. I think his name was Manshevetsky or something like that. Who was the head of the Bund, the Warsaw Bund. And the Warsaw Bund was the Maskilim, was the very extreme left wing Maskilim, people who didn't believe in the Torah Shebiksav, the Torah Shebalpe, people who didn't, non believers. The Bund, the Warsaw Bund, they were known to be very extreme non believers. And he was present, and he went up to Blue of a Rebbe and he said, "Rabbi, Grand Rabbi Spiro," that was his name, "Grand Rabbi Spiro, I said, you're a wise man. I came also to the Adlok of the menorah, but it makes absolutely no sense what you said. You said, Shechionu v'kiemonu v'gionu l'azman hazeh. You thanked the Kodesh Baruch Hu for making us alive, for keeping us alive. Shechionu v'kiemonu v'gionu l'azman hazeh. And it makes absolutely zero sense. Yes, we are alive, but we are a fraction of Klal Yisrael from 2 years ago. We're a fraction. Our wives have been shechted, our kids have been killed, our siblings, our families, everything been completely destroyed to an extent, to an unprecedented extent. How can you stand over here, Mr. Grand Rabbi, you're a clever man, how can you say, Shechionu v'kiemonu v'gionu l'azman hazeh? That's what Mr. Manshevetsky, or the name was something similar to that, the head of the Warsaw Bund, he was a thinking man, a wise man. So how can you ask such a thing? So Blue of a Rebbe responded to him, and he said, you know what? I'll tell you some things. I had exactly the same question. You're asking a wise question. I had the same question. I was wondering myself, how can I make that bracha? Everybody's killed, and there's nothing left of Klal Yisrael, only fraction of us. How can I stand and say Shechionu? So to an extent that I wanted to pass on the kibbutz to somebody, I couldn't genuinely make the bracha. And did you notice I was looking around to pass on the candle to somebody else, because I was unable to make the bracha. But as I was passing along the candle, because I was unable to make the bracha, and I wanted to pass it on to somebody else, I noticed thousands of people who were standing here. I didn't notice beforehand how many people were behind me. At that point, I noticed how many people were behind me. And it was a very, very large number of Yidden who were here. Thousands of people who, despite all the hardships, despite all the difficulties, but despite all the challenges, after all that, are still standing here on Hanukkah, trying to light the menorah, praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and wanting to look ahead into the future rather than back. After all that, there are still thousands of Yidden here, prepared to stand together to praise the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And I said, you know what, actually, yes, it's quite unbelievable what Klal Yisrael is. It's nothing quite like them. And therefore, I felt that actually, yes, I am able to make the bracha. That gave me tremendous inspiration. And with that, I was able to make the bracha of Shechion V'Kiyon Razon Azeh. It's interesting because it reminded me of what the Yavid says in the city, a very famous passage. He says that, you know, the Kiyas Yamsuf is a great, great nace, but there's no greater nace than the history of Klal Yisrael. There's no greater nace. Greater yet than Kiyas Yamsuf is the nace of Klal Yisrael's existence. And with that in mind, he told us, you know, that Shechion V'Kiyon Razon Azeh. His yid was blown away, and it changed him. And when he moved off after the DP camp, he was able to move away to America. He moved to America, where I can't say it was a shame to admit it, apparently wasn't. But he always remembered this conversation he had, and it changed his perspective to people who keep Torah mitzvahs. That whilst he himself wasn't able to actually step all the way, but still, his perception changed, and because of a conversation he had with the Grand Rabbi of Bluzhev. Is that how you heard the story? Pretty much? Okay, fine. Your father will tell you, will say it better than me, but that's the story. The reason I'm saying it is because I think that's the story of the 3 weeks to 9 days. I think that it's not just good, it's not about thinking about the history of Klal. It's not a history lesson, the 9 days. Think Choban Habayis. First, Beis HaMikdash got destroyed on the year, da-da-da. Second, Beis HaMikdash got destroyed on the year, da-da-da. And that's the 3 weeks, and it's not about the history. It's not the history element of it, although that's very interesting as well. But that's not the point. It's about how to take the history into the future, how we're able to look into the future. Page 258, Simon Shin Tezayin, Seif Yud. We are moving on with dangerous animals. That's something we've been mentioning a few times. What is the halacha with regards to dangerous animals? Tzod, with regards to dangerous animals. So Shulchan Aruch is very clear what the halacha is. Kol chayo v'remes, top of page 258. Kol chayo v'remes, any animal, even if it's an insect, shem noishchin, which can bite, who may miss him and kill, vadai, without a doubt, such as lion. What are the dangerous snakes? Are there any dangerous snakes in South Africa? Yeah. You say yes, and Barry Kagan says no. So we've got a problem here. Yeah, but not. Yeah. There is Tucker Dangerous World in the. Excuse me. What are the dangerous animals? Are they dangerous snakes? Scorpions? Yes, spiders? Right. I thought, in England, is there any dangerous animal potentially? I can only think of one potentially dangerous, and that is, what are they called? Some insects that can bite with something they can cause, what are they called? Ticks. Are they called ticks? No, I think some insects in the forest can at times be. I know. In some. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If a person is absolutely so, any animal that could potentially be dangerous, whether it's an insect or a large animal, memisim vadai, which you know is dangerous. Why are you allowed to nerogim b'shabbos? You're allowed to kill him on Shabbos. Why? It's dangerous because nefesh. Now, afilu ein rotzin acharov, even if they're not running behind you. So if you've got a lion standing peacefully and calmly in front of you, looking at you, you're still allowed to kill it. Not only, never mind if it's running after you, then obviously you're allowed to kill it. But even if it's not attacking you, you're still allowed to kill it. Why? Because it's a dangerous animal. Now, I want to ask you a question. What about, that's really interesting, what about if you've got a lion, which is, you encounter a lion in the middle of, suddenly on Mowbray Road, suddenly there's a lion standing in front of you. But now, we're learning, if it's running after you, you're allowed to kill it. If it's standing still, you're allowed to kill it as well. What about if he's running away from you? you've got this really, this cobra. What's the most venomous snake? Yeah, standing, but it's running away from you. A dangerous animal running away from you. What's that? Are you allowed to kill it, yes or no?
Depends who it's running towards.
It's running away from you. It's running in between the cracks. Running behind the cracks, running into the forest. Pardon?
It could be off to other people.
Could be off to other people. So therefore, you're allowed to kill it.
Preventing
from killing others, you're allowed to kill it. It's running towards the forest, you're still allowed to kill it.
Potentially, yes.
Yes? How about to kill an animal which is running away from you?
Unless it's much running to a bear shakas,
then very common. Okay, so I want to show you Mishnah Berurah. In Seif Katan, Mem Hei. Mem Dalet Steshem, a dangerous animal, Kelev Shoita. That's what Mishnah Berurah defined as a dangerous animal. A wild dog. That's Mishnah Berurah's eyes, a dangerous animal. He's not talking about leopard and lions. He's talking about wild dogs. Bechiah Gavnan, similar. Why are wild dogs dangerous? Because they're out of control, right? And they are dangerous. So Zivkot Mehe tells us, Achop behind, if they're escaping away from you, Afilu Boichin Milfonov. Mishnah Berurah says, Afilu and even Boichin, they escape Milfonov from you. Yes! Mishnah Berurah paskens, even if you've got a dangerous animal running away from you, nevertheless, you're allowed to kill it. I think I've got pshat in it. Unconditionally, Mishnah Berurah says you're allowed to. Whether it's running into the forest, whether it's running into between cracks, whether it's running away into a pit, you're allowed to kill the animal. And I think I know pshat. Because first of all, who says that it's that? Because sometimes they're just escaping as a defense mechanism, but as soon as they realize that you are not after them, they may be jumping out. So never mind others, which could be true as well, but it could also be a danger still for you. As soon as you are not in full awareness of it, you know, fully on top of it, it may yet be dangerous to you. And Sofik Pekuach Nefesh is also Doiche Shabbos, and therefore, yes, you're allowed to kill even an escaping lion away from you. You're allowed to kill it. Probably the answer is, what would you tell about this? Why are you not, based on that, why not meant to run after dangerous animals? Why don't you go to Kruger National Park killing all the lions? Because they could potentially be dangerous. Why not? Because we're learning now that even if they are running away from you, on Shabbos you're allowed to kill it. So Rabbi Kagan says, never mind, okay, on Shabbos I hear you can't, lechatchila. But on weekdays, on a random Tuesday, go to the place where they are. Why? Why not meant to?
Because they're under control in the Kruger National Park. They're not posing a danger because there's qualified people who have them under control.
Yeah? Is that a sufficient answer?
It was roaming the streets during the weekday.
It's in the wild.
It's a basic din roda, just like if there's an Arab.
But why? We go to dangerous days, I'm sure. Yeah, okay, so yes, I think to answer slight variation of what you're saying, I think that you're not allowed to put yourself in a dangerous situation. That means that if you're going to a certain area where you know there's dangerous animals, you're not really meant to. A person is not allowed to put himself into a dangerous situation. Once you are there, admittedly, you're allowed to kill the animals, but you're not allowed to lechatchila put yourself into a place where there is. Don't go into that river where you know there's sharks and piranhas, because you know once you are there, you're allowed to kill them, but. Veshamazikin continues the Mishnah Berurah, continues at Shulchan Aruch, second line, Veshamazik, with regards to all the dangerous animals. Kugoin, such as Nochosh, a snake, the Akub, and a scorpion. Now those animals, B'markum She'enon Mimisin, if it's in a place that they don't normally tend to kill, Imrotzin Acharov, if they're running after you, Mutar Lehogom, you're allowed to kill them. Veim laugh, but if they are not running after you, also you're not allowed to kill them. So if it is a nochosh and akrof, which normally they don't end up killing, you're not allowed to kill them unless they're running after you. But if there's a scorpion running around over there, which may not be necessarily running after you, and it may not necessarily be dangerous, and it may not be necessarily after you, but, so, If it's running, if it's just like roaming around, what you're allowed to do, have a motel door, so you're allowed to step on it, lefitumoy. Lefitumoy, what's a good translation for lefitumoy? You're allowed to step on it, lefitumoy. What's that? What does that mean? Yeah.
It's a phrase that means absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, that's what it means. Lefitumoy means like naturally without much effort. By and a by. By the way, yeah, okay, I don't know that word.
In the normal course,
that means more to me. Thank you very much.
Don't bother learning that.
Okay. Don't file that away. Okay, good. Okay, in the normal course of events, that's much better for me. Thank you. And even if you're intending to kill the animal, but if it's appearing as if you're just like, you see that scorpion over here, which is a scorpion which could potentially, yes, it is a mazik, it is that. But it's not running after you, the scorpion, it's just like roaming around, walking around. So now, lefitumoy, you're allowed to kill it, even if your intention is to kill it. Elo, only shemar atzmoy, you are showing your appearances, keilu eino mischaven. It must appear when you're stepping on that scorpion and killing it. It must look as if you're just walking, strolling along, walking to shul, as opposed to physically trying to catch it and kill it. That's the chilik over here. So again, if you've got a dangerous animal in a dangerous place, if it's an animal that is vadai a mazik, vadai a dangerous animal, there's no doubt that this spider over here, what's the most venomous spider? You know about spider. What's the most venomous spider?
Tarantula.
Okay. So if you see them, you see it, it's there. And you know that it is full of venom, and it's here it is. So the loch is, you're allowed to kill it. Don't ask too many questions. Go for it and kill it. No questions asked. However, if it is a shamazik, an animal which is not necessarily killing, and it's not necessarily after you, if it's running after you, the scorpion is running after you, and it may be a dangerous animal, kill it. Fine. If that scorpion, which may or may not be dangerous, is just rolling around, then lefitumoy, you're allowed to kill it if it's not your, even if it's your intention, as long as it doesn't appear, it's not evident that you're running after it to kill it. It's a bit like a malice ayin kind of thing. Yeah. What about, what is better? Rabbi Yisai, in a scenario, you're allowed to kill the animal. What is better, to kill the animal or to take a kli and trap it? What's better? Kill it or trap it? What's better? There is this dangerous spider and it's after you. Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to kill it. I want to know, is it better to trap it or not? Pardon? Equal.
If you're trapping and then you're continually doing the love.
So we learned actually.
As opposed to one motion of one.
Very good question. So we learned recently a bialocha that says not what you are saying. The bialocha said, what about, you remember the bialocha we spoke about? That what's the bialocha if somebody's standing outside a door and he didn't realize that there was an animal trapped in it? Do you have to stand until Mot Shabbos or can you go away? Mishnah Berurah said, you might as well just stand there. It doesn't make a difference. Once it's trapped, the ongoing standing and trapping of the animal makes no difference. It's not an ongoing aveira. The action of trapping is the aveira. The passive action of retaining something trapped is not an aveira, according to bialocha. Consequently, what's better, trapping or killing? The dangerous snake. Trapping is. So the bialocha, the Mishnah Berurah says over here, and I'm very, 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 it's very interesting that your mom is saying that. In Sifkot Memzai, Ledorosom, Fuadin Shekoifola and Kli. The Mishnah Berurah points out that you can dorsom, you can step on it and kill it. Vahuadin, and similarly, Shekoifola and is a Kli. You're also allowed to cover it with a Kli and trapping it in that way. And that is something which the Achronim point out, and they emphasize, and they stress. That you could have argued that maybe trapping is better. You could have maybe thought about that trapping. No, Mishnah Berurah says, "Behu adin and simile." So we're learning in this Mishnah Berurah, Mr. Berlin's Diuk, that there is no chilek, there is no difference. Killing, trapping, makes no nafkamina, makes no difference at all. You can do it, they're both. If you want to kill it, go for it. If you want to trap it, go for it. It doesn't make a difference in terms of dangerous and trapping dangerous animal on Shabbos. So that's Mamash, as you're saying. There's no There's no better, no worse. Yeah. See if you don't This is now going a little bit off the topic. A person is allowed to yishavshev, to rub peraglo with his feet. Roik, saliva. If you're spitting onto the floor, al gabe karka, you're allowed to spit saliva onto the floor. Mishum demash v'gumois. And then you're allowed to spit and afterwards rub it into the earth. Because mash v'gumois, because you are making gumois, it's the gzera of mash v'gumois, smoothening earth. Making a smooth ground. Aval muta ledorse lefitumoy, but you have to just step on it lefitumoy. What was the correct translation of lefitumoy again?
In the normal course
event, you're allowed to do that. Sheinu mischavan lemareach, because your intention is not, if you're just walking about normally, your intention is not to smoothen the earth, but ash with gumos and to fill the holes. Aval gavdi mele mareach, it could be that you are smoothening it out, but no worries, it's not your intention. Kiloy mechavan shori mishum yisusa. So again, remember, in previous generations, until not such a long time ago, people would, the houses, and for sure the shuls, they were not paved, there were no stones, they were made out of earth. The floor was earth. So it was very common to spit, especially because of the cold. People would spit. That was very awful. And there was no tissues, like we've got tissue boxes everywhere. So imagine, you've got an earth floor, no tissues, and it's freezing cold. And people have got, people would spit. That was very normal. Very, very normal. Much more. Nowadays, I don't think there's any heta. I don't understand why people are still relying on the heta of. Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to spit in shul. I've seen somebody doing it. I think it's Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan says you're allowed to do it, but I don't understand how somebody can do it still. It's not referring to our kind of circumstance anymore. I know. Yeah. So I don't. It's mutter. No, it's the Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to do it, but I feel the circumstances have changed. Yeah, it's different now. So, but yes, if you have, imagine an earthen floor, what would you agree? It's different now, no? So you've got an earthen floor, and it's cold, and people don't know. So then Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to spit, and then smoothen it. That's also because mash v'gumois, smoothening earth. That's also. However, if you are spitting and you're just walking about, lefitumoy, natural cause event, that's okay.
And just spitting.
Spitting itself is mutter.
Moisture.
Yeah, that's not a problem.
Not
yeah, because that yeah. So yeah. So that's what the halacha is. Yeah. Okay. To finish off, just to summarize what we covered tonight, we spoke about dangerous animals you're allowed to kill, even if they're not running. We said, Mishmur even says if you're running away from you, you're still allowed to kill dangerous animals, bevadai. If it's shamazikin and there's no evidence that they're dangerous, then you're allowed to kill them if they are posing a danger, they're running after you. If they're just, like passively, peacefully strolling around, you're not allowed to kill it. But you're allowed to step on it if you're tumoy. Even if your intention is to kill it, we spoke about spitting. If you're intending to smoothen that, it's also to do that. If you're just doyres lefitumoy, then it is mutar. There's no problem mash megumois and memareach, and that's the halacha. Fine. Having said that, Rabbi Yisai, and gentlemen, I wish you a very good evening and a very good Shabbos.